Listener-supported St. Gabriel Catholic Radio AM 820 brings you Dominican Dimensions, a half hour of lively discussion about Catholic issues from a Dominican perspective, featuring the friars from St. Patrick Church in Columbus. And now, Dominican Dimensions.
Okay, welcome to Dominican Dimensions, a half hour of lively discussion about Catholic issues from a Dominican perspective. My name is Father Stephen Dominic Hayes, and I'm a friar at St. Patrick Priory in Columbus. Today, I'm joined in the studio by Father Raymond Schneider and Father Peter Tuttleben.
Hello.
So, today we were casting about what we should talk about, and Father Schneider had an interesting idea. I won't say a pet peeve, but certainly a topic which I think is well worth discussing.
Something we often like to talk about are just those topics that, well, you know, we as priests often encounter moments where, like, I wish more Catholics knew about X, Y, or Z. And so we have a forum to help make that happen. Privileged to have a forum to help make that happen on this show. And one topic that I had in mind, I think that Catholics should know more about in general, is that of godparents and sponsors, both those who they may choose for as godparents for their children, being baptized as infants, but also considering the role of someone who's playing the role of a sponsor in confirmation or a sponsor for someone entering the church, becoming Catholic.
So Godfather, like the movie Godfather?
No, not exactly. This was around before that.
This is like a good example of like what you don't want in a godparent. You know, if you remember that scene, you have, you know, while the child is being baptized, the person who's ordered the assassinations is having the assassinations carried out. This is definitely not the kind of person you want as a godparent. Godparents really need to be, and the other problem thing we do is we tend to be, I think we have a culture where godparent is seen as an honor, okay, given in the family, or a way to involve maybe a family member who hasn't been that active in the church, and now we want to get them a little more. And so, and there is a logic to this, I suppose, that, you know, one way to get people to start carrying out responsibilities is to give them a responsibility. But the problem is the office is really for the benefit of the child, not really the benefit of the godparent. And I'm not sure we have this right all the time.
So godparent has a cultural role, but it also has a religious role with respect to the person who's being received into the church.
It could be seen as one role.
Sure.
I mean, one of the things that I was just talking with somebody about this the other day, that, you know, one of the problems about thinking about family in general in our society is we are damaged by the Enlightenment in this regard, which talks about individual rights all the time, mm-hmm. but we don't talk about social rights or rights of collectives like families.
Yeah, well, that's a really interesting thought. You know, a lot of times now we think like that the individual comes before the family or the community, right? Whereas maybe before the Enlightenment, people thought that the community kind of came before the individual, which makes more sense when you think about it because, I mean, from the very moment you're conceived, you're welcomed into a community. I mean, we don't come into the world as isolated individuals. We come into the world in terms of a communal context.
Right. If you were completely isolated as an infant, you'd die.
Yeah. But even before the child is born,
right,
they're literally in a community.
I often go back to Jesus as the example of where we find an authentic and true anthropology.
Mm-hmm.
And when we talk about the incarnation, when God became man, what does that mean? We tend to think in our society of the individual Jesus, you know, as a person, as a body. You know, we think of the biology of his body and so forth. But the genealogies in Luke and Matthew point to the fact that when God becomes man for us, he also occupies, by necessity, a whole bunch of social relationships, you know, that are now all of a sudden he has a bunch of relatives, of ancestors, good and bad, which he has to deal with. And this is the same thing true of the child who is born into, you know, the family, you know, and how healthy is the family,
yeah.
You know. And religiously, a lot of families are not that healthy. Socially, a lot of families these days are not that healthy.
Yeah.
In right. The conventional sense.
I wonder if I might bring us to more of a kind of practical focus question.
That's not Dominican, Father. That's not Dominican.
I think those listening may appreciate some things that are actionable from us. And one of these, frankly, is to ask the question, maybe even as a general way to say the title of this topic is, mm-hmm. how do I choose good godparents
yeah.
for my children? You know, let's say, you know, talking about having a baby on the way. What do mom and dad think about as they're preparing? And really, I think that's the first step, is to think about it in advance, you know,
yeah.
To think about the baptism, you know, even as you're expecting the child, and to think about the role of the godparents and who it is that you want to ask. And I think the top priority has to be the spiritual good of the child.
Sure.
You know, the godparents are really there to assist the parents who are the primary educators in the faith of all of their children. That's something, again, we could go more into the political context of the way history has changed. Think about how the church maintains that so importantly, that parents are the primary educators of their children, and in a particular way in regard to the faith. As are the godparents, and really we see it even in the baptismal rite, the baptism of an infant, the parents are pretty almost heavily interrogated. They're asked the same question several times. Are they really, and even right before the water gets poured on the baby's head,
yeah.
okay, are you sure you want to baptize this kid and you're going to bring him up in the faith?
Yeah, and they're routinely admonished to do that, right?
That's
repeatedly,
right. That's right. And the godparents are assisting all of that. They're not referred to as much, but they have an important role there. So that's the way to understand what it is to be a godparent, is you're going to assist the Christian education, the spiritual welfare of this new Christian, you know?
Yeah.
Sometimes, perhaps even stepping in when, for instance, the parents are impaired, you know, in whatever way.
Sure.
Through ill health or, you know, the godparents might be the person that ends up taking the kid to Sunday school, you know,
absolutely.
or even just educating them on their own. Just a thought. But really, I think it's important to have the spiritual good of the new Christian, the child, being kept in mind.
Yeah, absolutely. So the godparent's job then is to raise up a child, or assist the parents in raising up a child for heaven, and maybe even necessarily stepping in to make sure that happens.
Right. If you want to be precise about duties, then if parents' duties are to birth children, to nourish children, educate them for this life and the world to come, and that includes the nourishment for this life and the world to come, and then see them settled in life, which hopefully is both a life, you know, for this world and a life unto the world to come, then godparents would have this duty at a distance, as you say.
Sure.
So, I mean, I often tell parents when I'm baptizing that, you know, the most important thing their children will learn from them is love, and that will be by seeing not how what they say so much or talk about love, or
sure.
even how they love the children. It's how they love each other. This is the love mm-hmm. of peers. And at a remove, I think the godparents do this also, especially in those moments when it's difficult for parents for children to be parented by children. And parare, of course, is to obey.
Yep.
So when is it difficult? I mean, when we're 7, you know, we pick everything up like sponges from our family. When we're 16, relationships with the parents are often a different matter.
Sure.
Because we're rubbing the velvet off our antlers becoming adults, and we often do it on the parents.
Mm-hmm.
But the godparents, I think, therefore, if they, you know, there's a natural movement to grow out of the authority of your parents' house. But I think the example of good godparents shows you that you never outgrow the authority of your father in heaven.
Yeah.
And that's where they can, one of the places they can be good.
I think that's a really neat idea for the role of the godparent that I had never thought before. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting because I've talked to people about this before, but I never drew the connection to godparents before. Mm-hmm. You see, like, as kids grow up, it is kind of true, like, they don't take advice from their parents,
right?
Right. Not as often as they should, but it's very common not to, right?
Mm-hmm.
I know I do it. I kind of when people come to me and talk about this, I kind of give the own example that I have. Like, there are definitely times where I just don't listen to the advice of my parents,
mm-hmm.
precisely because they're my parents.
Right.
But yet, like, another person can come and has come along 5
right.
minutes after my parents give me the mm-hmm. advice, and I don't listen to them, give me the exact same advice, and I say, oh, that's a really good idea.
Right. Yeah. What is, I think Samuel Clemens once said that, you know, when he was, I'm not going to quote him exactly, but it's something like when he was 16, he was convinced his parents were the biggest fools in the, his father was the biggest fool in the universe. And by 35, he was amazed to see what the old man had learned in the interval.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I was thinking, of what it may be useful, you know, okay, so these are all general principles, but what is it that, you know, what is it that practically speaking a godparent can do? What are some ways in which they can exercise that role?
Sure. One, I think example of life, right? And then two, I think actual, the ability to witness to the work of Jesus in their life, right? Sometimes we can't explain to people like why they're quote unquote wrong or like what they need to do better because people don't listen. But like sometimes we can concretely witness not just by actions or demeanor, but by explicit words, what Jesus has done in my life. So a godparent can bear witness to the work of the Lord in their life. And then the godparent can remonstrate with the parents when they're falling short of duty of their parents. And they can even step in and talk about the faith with their God children, right?
That's right. I think that's it shows you the importance that the godparents themselves take their faith seriously.
Absolutely.
Because you can't give what you don't have. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think one of the things people come to the office for instance, at a parish frequently is a kind of form signing off that they're a practicing Catholic and that they can be a godparent in a baptismal ceremony.
Yep.
And it might seem like, you know, from the church's angle, a kind of legal formality, but it preserves and protects something, which is, no, if you're going to be a godparent, okay, that's taking another step in the faith, and it's something you should be prepared for by, as you said, Father Peter, first and foremost, the witness of your own life. I remember in Kansas, we had a pastor at my family's parish, and the pastor liked to do baptisms within the Sunday Mass. And part of the reason was, I think, just to keep the notion of baptism sure. alive and well in sure. the congregation. You know, it's certainly a doable thing. But he would always there in front of everyone say, okay, godparents, your role is to remember this date and to send a card or call yeah. this child on this date. You're going to be a kind of living reminder of their baptism.
Sure. That's really nice.
And he's not telling that just to those godparents, but doing it in the Mass.
Oh,
he's
yeah,
telling
yeah,
it to
sure.
everyone there.
Sure. Yeah.
You're listening to The Dominican Dimensions, a lively half hour of discussion about Catholic issues from a Dominican perspective. My name is Father Stephen Dominic Hayes, and I'm a friar at St. Patrick Priory in Columbus. I'm joined in the studio by Father Raymond Snyder and by Father Peter Totalbun.
Hello.
So we are been discussing godparents and the importance of godparents. I think in my own case, my Aunt Margaret has been my godparent, and she my mother's sister, and devout woman. You know, she's still praying for me. You know, I mean, and that is something I think is part of a godparent's duty. We talked, I think, a little about this, a practice of the faith, but as I said, one of the things that matters for kids is that the adults in their life have an interest in them and show that interest. And I know my Aunt Margaret has always done that. So, I mean, whenever I'm still home, I still visit her. She's in a rehab hospital at this point. She's 99 years old. No, but she's sharp as a tack and still keeps praying for me.
Yeah. I'm really edified hearing the way people speak sometimes about their godparents to say, oh, well, so-and-so, that's my godfather or that's my yeah. godmother. And I think for others for whom that role isn't as important, it's just a nice reminder of the power, the potential that this role has. If you think about the minimum, okay, what's the minimum? Okay, they be there at the baptism and they keep in touch as a kind of witness throughout the child's life. But it's the Christian life, so we're not just concerned with the minimum. What's the maximum to strive for? And
yep.
there's really no upper limit. You know, godparents can be a huge help to nurturing the faith in people at all ages.
Yep. Well, and it's especially important to note, we know what helps people to maintain their faith. We've done the sociological research about why people stay in the faith, why people leave the faith, right? And the number one influence is parents. The number two influence is other adults that are close to the young person, right? So if you're talking about how to keep young people in the faith, it's very much through having a family practice of the faith and then also a broader cultural practice of the faith that people have reference to. So that practicing the faith doesn't seem exceptional or weird, but it just seems like this is what everybody close to me that I have seen as good and loving does. And that makes a profound impact.
because it's a web of relationship and a web of meaning that is woven into life from its earliest stages. Now, I think that's it goes back to what we were saying about the importance of, the culture, the web of relationship that human beings are born into. I mean, that's the domestic church is where we, in the home, is where we actually learn about these things. I mean, if we have a religious practice that basically sort of punches the clock with Jesus on a Sunday, and then there's no practice at home, you don't have real strength. I think it's interesting to note that culturally we have a tradition of strong home devotion, like in a lot of Hispanic households. You also have a strong tradition of godparents.
Sure.
We have los padrinos, the godparents, have co-equal rights in disciplining children, which is a little more than most of us would expect from godparents. But it exists.
Yeah.
So there's another aspect to this, which I think, comes up later on in life with confirmation, for instance.
Sure.
Where we have someone, generally speaking, they're still, we think of those being confirmed as kids. Okay, you're in sixth grade, you're still a kid, okay? In the eyes of, being your autonomous in your own person and all that.
Sure.
But oddly enough, the church requires sponsors, and if it's someone being baptized, godparents, in the case of those who become Catholic as adults.
Sure.
And I think thinking about that might reveal a little bit about the whole importance of godparents. Like, why do you think it is exactly that everyone that enters the church needs to have someone, let's say, standing by their side?
It wasn't a meaningless ritual. It wasn't a meaningless ritual add-on.
Superfluity?
Superfluity. There we are. Good job, Peter. Okay. It wasn't a meaningless ritual superfluity.
That's right. Well, the rituals, lex orandi, lex credendi, it shows us something about what's going on in reality.
If you look at, I took care of doing RCA for years and years and years. And one of the things I noticed was how many people, when they chose godparents, often chose people from whom they had received their attraction to the faith, from whom they caught the spark of Christ's light.
Sure.
And so that's very logical, And again, there is a kind of authentic, an authentic parenthood in giving life to those who did not have life in Christ before, being the instrument by which Christ communicates his work as bridegroom of the church, as spiritual father. We don't usually talk about it, but how he manifests the fatherhood of the Father through the work of Christians. Mm.
Well, I think it just testifies to the fact that you just simply can't navigate through the world of the church on your own, right? So as Christians, we live a life different than the rest of the world. It can be hard to navigate the life of a Christian in the world as your own. It can be hard, if not impossible, even to navigate the world of the church as your own, how to grow as your own, on your own, right? You could attempt to read books and gasp, listen to Dominican Dimension on the Catholic radio or whatever. But this is just simply not going to be sufficient to produce the kind of maturation as a Christian that you need. You need older brothers, parent figures even in the faith to sort of guide you and direct you so that you don't make all the mistakes that everybody else has already made.
And this is where I think it's even more important, the role of someone who is a sponsor in RCIA, for instance, or the sponsor of a catechumen or candidate, because they don't have necessarily parents around to be a part of the whole process.
Alone.
That's right, because there's...
Awfully lonely if you go it alone.
That's right, because there's already a...
Awfully lonely if you go it alone.
That's right, because there's already a pre-existing network of family connections there. And, those who do convert as adults are very often, you might say, taking a big sacrifice, a kind of social sacrifice,
sure,
because they're, being disconnected from those who find their move, who disapprove of their move,
yep.
And so I think it's important that they especially be strengthened. So you might even say when someone's asked to be the sponsor or godparent of an adult, their role is even more important than if this were a child.
Yeah, I can talk about my faith to my mom, my dad, my brothers, my sisters. My brother's in religion, right? But if you come into the church, you might not have somebody that you can talk about your faith in that way with. And you need somebody who you can talk to like that.
One question that, just interesting observation, is that we, of course, in the church recognize the baptism of other non-Catholic Christians.
Yes.
If it's done, provided it's done with water and in the Trinitarian formula, intending to do what the church generally intends, as given by Christ in the scriptures. So we recognize the validity of those who have been baptized in non-Catholic Christian churches. But someone might say then, well, what is exactly is it that's special about Catholic baptism? And, well, I think having the emphasis on godparents here is one aspect. But, you know, I think there's a real importance to recognizing the unique character of Catholic baptism and how when one is baptized as a Catholic, that sticks with them, you know, for their whole life. They're they're under the jurisdiction, even. We makes it sound legal, but it's true. They're under the jurisdiction of the church, and they have that as a connecting link. For instance, if they need to, if they're going to get married in the future, it's important that it be within the church because they've been baptized Catholic. It really doesn't work outside of that.
Yeah.
So anyway, there's just some other aspects of baptism that are frequently asked questions, and I thought it might be nice to bring that up. So confirmation is one of those other times at which a sponsor has an important role.
Sure.
And do you have any thoughts about that, Father Peter?
Well, I mean, typically confirmation happens during the time of adolescence. That's the contemporary practice of the American church, right? And there's this idea, I think, that sometimes, I mean, it's kind of a shrewd sort of thing that adolescents don't always listen to their parents, right? But they have somebody else that they can see. So you don't just think it's like, and standing up for their, it's like just me or just my family or like, oh, this is this weird thing that my parents make me do. No, that you see that there's this broader connection that you, that the people you love have with their faith, right?
One thing that strikes me is, what about the responsibilities, if any, that those who are who have godparents have towards their godparents? No,
I don't. How does it work the other direction? You mean?
Yes, because I mean, if parere is to obey, then what does it mean to obey, to be subject to your godparents?
That's right. I think it falls even under the virtue of piety, you know, and the obligations of the fourth commandment, you know. Just as we honor father and mother, there's a certain special role in honoring godmother and godfather.
Well, especially if they're doing things to bring you closer to the faith. I mean, they're helping give you the most important thing that there is in your life. And so, I mean, they're giving you a debt that you can't repay. And so there's a certain sense of gratitude and thanksgiving for what they're doing to help you with your Catholic faith.
And maybe at least, I'm probably speaking personally here, a duty to see, to learn from them as they go ahead of you. Because, I mean, for most of us who are baptized as infants, our godparents are in the preceding generation. So as I said, my aunt is 99.
Sure.
And, you know, as I look at her, she's been in a hospital bed for years and still cheerful. She's always works hard to be hospital to people who are visiting her and so forth. And I'm learning from her. I mean, because as I get older, too, and you guys are younger, but as I get older, you know, I mean, the prospect of my own death is before me. And, you know, one of the things I'm learning from my godmother now is how to approach death, you know. So there's lots of things I think you can learn.
Sure.
To see how that generation, especially the ones who are not complicated by the fact of being my mother and father, but these others in my life who are living the faith from the heart, and are wrestling with things which I eventually will have to wrestle with.
Sure.
They continue to teach me even to the end of life. And as I said, that relationship is special. This is the relationship that God has given me to learn from because this person is my godmother, my godfather.
Yeah, excellent.
Yeah, I think considering all of these things together, it just puts a whole lot more seriousness on it, I think, when, for instance, you're a parent choosing godparents, or when you're asked to be a godparent. It's not just, oh, okay, that makes sense. You know, this is my niece or nephew. This is my cousin. Okay. But it's more like, okay, here's a relationship that will continue to exist, a relationship that will, you know, is a kind of lifelong connection.
And it's beautiful when you take things seriously, because when you invest in relationships, you always get more than you receive, right? You actually receive by giving, right? So when you take a relationship of godparent seriously, you get something special, that relationship that you wouldn't have had before.
That's right. It's God blesses us through responsibilities very often.
I mean, that's what love is about, isn't it? You know, love is about pouring out your life for another. It's taking responsibility for that which is put before you. It's not duties to merely be discharged, but something to be served, to empty your own heart with as you seek to love the other as Christ loves them. So thank you for joining us today for Dominican Dimensions. My name is Father Stephen Dominic Hayes, and I'm a friar at St. Patrick Priory in Columbus. And today I've been joined in the studio by Father Raymond Snyder and Father Peter Tuttleben. Yes. Let's end now in prayer. Let's invoke St. Dominic, the founder of the Order of Preachers, as we always do. O light of the Church,
teacher of truth, rose of patience, ivory of chastity, freely you have poured forth the waters of wisdom. Preacher of grace, unite us with the blessed. Amen.
Dominican Dimensions is a production of listener-supported St. Gabriel Catholic Radio AM 820. Archives of Dominican Dimensions and all of our locally produced programs are available at stgabrielradio.com.
Dominicans proudly wear Our Lady's Rosary on their belts. The Rosary is a gospel prayer which draws us into the mystery of God and His Son, Jesus Christ. With over 135 friars in formation for the four U.S. provinces, the Dominicans are one of the fastest-growing men's religious orders in this country. This is Father Benedict Kroll from the Dominican House of Studies in Washington, D.C. Consider making a vocation weekend. Google Dominican Friars to learn more.